Want to become an AI trailblazer in the product world? Pragmatic Institute's newest workshop, AI for Product Professionals, is your ticket to generative AI mastery. In this hands-on training, learn to master ChatGPT and prompt engineering to transform your product strategies, rapidly create content, optimize workflows, and make razor-sharp product decisions fueled by data. Don't just keep up with the AI revolution, lead it. Seats are limited. Enroll today at pragmaticinstitute.com/AI workshop.
Hello, and welcome to the Pragmatic Product Chat series, where we tackle the biggest challenges facing today's product management, product marketing, and other market and data-driven professionals with some of the best minds in the industry. I'm Rebecca Caligaris for Pragmatic Institute and your host for this episode. One of the things I tell my team regularly that my job is great. My job is to find really good talent and then just like knock the obstacles out of the way to make them successful. I think I've gotten a whole lot better at it in my career, but I would be lying to all of you, which you know I don't like to do, if I said I've like never gotten it wrong, right? I've hired people that turned out not to be the right one. On the flip side of that too, I think I've interviewed for positions that really were a great fit for me, and I didn't necessarily nail that interview either, right? So I've been on the both sides of this. So I'm really, 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 really excited to have on today Jordan Burton, who has sort of an unusual career, if you think of it. He's a professional interviewer, not like me on the podcast. But this is his area of expertise. He's an executive assessor, an interviewing trainer. He's got over 17 years of experience doing this, right? He specializes in training VC and private equity investors and high growth companies on how to hire the best talent, right? These are really critical roles at really critical like times in these companies, and getting those right hires in is critical. He brings to this role that he has now as co-founder of the training firm Talgo. He's got experience at the advisory firm GH Smart, a consultant at Bain & Company, and he holds an MBA from Harvard Business School. You know, you may have heard of that, kind of an impressive place just down the street from me. So we're extremely excited to have you on, Jordan. Thanks for coming.
Well, thank you for having me.
Excellent. All right, Jordan, I always like to start with sort of like your origin story, right? How did you get where you are today? And why are you so passionate and so like, why did you focus on this area of interviewing?
Yeah, it sort of happened by accident. It certainly wasn't by design. So if you talked to me 20 years ago and said that I would be this kind of interviewing expert, I would have thought you were crazy. I'd worked at a management consultant as Bain & Company, as you indicated. I had actually had done a couple of sort of dot-com era startups. And basically I had a former boss of mine. It was about 17 years ago. It was actually before that he first told me about it, but he finally bit my ear enough for me to make this big left turn in my career 17 years ago. Told me about, a better approach to assessing talent in this firm called GH Smart that essentially had a data-driven way of essentially picking CEOs, of deciding which senior leaders were going to deliver well for investors, for boards, and who were not. And this approach to interviewing had really taken the private equity world by storm. The firm has since grown massively. I joined in 2007 and they've just ballooned since then. So I learned this approach to interviewing senior executives. And I really found that my true passion was teaching other people what I'd picked up along the way. So fast forward 7 years with that firm. And then, 10 years ago was when I'd struck off on my own. And really my goal with that was to package some of the best approaches to interviewing and make it something that you could roll out in an organization, something you could teach a senior executive, a mid-level professional, just help people become better at deciding who they want to join their teams. And that's kind of where it all came from. So it's become my passion.
It is now your passion. So when you say data-driven, right?
Yes.
Your first response is like, okay, so you just like look at the numbers and you don't really like think about the person or their personality. And I suspect that's not what you're going to tell me, right? So tell me a little bit more about what that approach looks like.
Yeah. So this is data as opposed to gut feel, intuition, instinct. Oh, I just really clicked with this person. This candidate just really seemed to be on their game. I kind of liked their responses. Well, really what's happening is that's not data. That's basically you having an affinity for someone and you're letting your biases creep in. And you're deciding that you like somebody before you really know where they've been and what they've done. So when we say data, sure, there's quantitative parts of that. Well, you know, how much have they grown revenue in their past? Let's say it was a sales executive or something like that. We want that kind of data. But there's also, we also include in data the stories about a person's life, where they've been, what they've done, the roles they've held, the teams they've built, the products they've designed, the customers they've landed. Like, you want to hear all of these stories and the sub-stories behind them, not just the surface level thing that they tell in every interview, really digging into these stories and understanding what they did, how they did it, understanding the eventual result of the things that they did. All of that we would call data. It's both quantitative and qualitative.
Oh, great. So one of the things that we teach a lot is like the, you know, you just don't take the first answer, right? You have to dig in.
That's right.
You talk a little bit about that. So how do you get beyond the, you know, what is your biggest weakness that we've all heard, right? But how do you get the story behind the story?
Yeah, it's interesting. There's an entire sort of, well, there's a science and there's kind of an art to follow-up questions. Mm-hmm. So when we do executive assessments, we're still in the business of doing interviewing ourselves as well as teaching other people. But what you notice is that the real nuggets that you get, the parts of the story that really shed light on a candidate's exceptional fit or lack of fit for a role, it's usually 3, 4, 5, 6, maybe even more follow-up questions deep. You have to get past that. How do you get past that? You need to know a little bit where you're going with the story, where the candidate's going with the story. So let's say that you were interviewing somebody for a product role and you ask them about a big accomplishment and they talk about a creative idea they had that got past some issue with the user experience that the prior version of the product had. You would want to make sure you understood really what was the thing that they did that moved the needle the most on that. So you want to get past things that are just like, hey, here's what the sales team ended up doing with the product. Now, there may be some things that they did that created advantage, but what really was this innovation? So you want to make sure that you're digging into the right part of the story. And a kind of rule of thumb or heuristic that we would say when you're digging into a story, what did they do? How did they do it? And how big of a deal it was? So in this case, the candidate tells you it was an innovation. So you understand there was an idea, there was some ideation. How did they do it? So you might ask a question like, what was the source of that idea? And they may say, well, I attended a conference here, or I had a mentor here, or it was just a flash of inspiration. You can learn a little bit about how they come up with at least this particular creative idea, but you're not
done. Which would
tell
you like, is this like a one and done, like a lightning in the bottle? You know what
I mean?
Right. Or how much of it was them? Yeah,
exactly.
That makes a lot of sense.
And then the important thing is to say, okay, we know it was an innovation. We know kind of what the source of it was. What was the impact of it? Was it just keeping up with the competition, or was this a massive breakthrough? On this, there's a few different ways that you can essentially connect that accomplishment to something tangible, some kind of a benchmark. So we would say, hey, you had five peers at Product Managers. How did that? How did the performance or the result of this innovation compare to what your peers were doing? So there's a peer comparison. There could be, how did the product end up doing relative to its competitors? So we had some rules engine that this person, you know, this product manager had created some innovation. What were the competitive products and how did we end up doing relative to those benchmarks? Or you could also benchmark versus the boss. Who did you report to? Or who is your most important stakeholder for this innovation? Well, I reported to the chief product officer. Well, what did that person think? So, you know, we'd ask who that person is and what would they say about it? Well, they would say it was the biggest game changer in our company's history, or they would say, oh, it was perfectly fine and it was something that we needed to do. So you get a sense of how big of a deal this innovation was.
And that, I mean, those are great questions. It seems so simple, but those are powerful, right? I know, are they paying attention to results? Are they a numbers focused product person? Are they thinking in terms of revenue and impact? Because end of the day, that is what makes the product successful, but it's not always the lens that a product person will bring to it. We all
For
should,
sure.
right? And then also in terms of the stakeholders, do you understand the stakeholders? Did you communicate with them along? Did you bring them along? Did you help them see why it was important so that it would be reflected back? Is a much deeper level of understanding of of how they position themselves in the organization than you would see it other ways as well.
It's interesting you bring that up. So there's two kinds of information that the candidate is sharing, and sort of in the example you mentioned. There's the explicit story they're telling. This is who the stakeholder was, and this is what they would likely tell you about my performance. Then there's also what we would call the meta information, the information about what they share. So that would be, do they frequently mention business results when they talk about their work? Do they frequently quantify or speak to metrics that they moved or not? Or is it, so you can get a sense from what they choose to share as to their mindset around what motivates them, what they look to in terms of the impact they want to create. We generally say pay more attention to the explicit story, the actual data that the candidate is sharing, but certainly do, you know, look for those cues as to whether they're proactively mentioning the stakeholder community, their interactions with them, and the business results that they deliver, for sure.
So you work with lots of different companies. I would think from my experience, right, that what would be a good CEO for company X is not necessarily a good CEO for company Y. Is that A, 100%. Just being naive?
No, it's a very true point. We think about all interviewing, all sort of hiring as being about fit to role. There certainly are some absolutes. There are people who tend to just overperform in every role and are very adaptable. But generally speaking, I have not met an executive of the hundreds that I've assessed over the years that would be great in every leadership role. Like, take the best CEO I've ever assessed. Right. I can absolutely tell you situations where that person would be a failure. Not because they're bad, but because, for example, they're very growth oriented. It's all about new products. It's all about innovation. It's all about
speed,
beating competitors. And this situation is a very operationally intense turnaround where preserving cash is the focus. It's not about growth. That's going to be a very unhappy and ineffective executive despite their talents.
So how do you, when you work with a client, understand sort of their environment? And then how does that affect the questions and the interviews that you hold?
There's a very important first step in an assessment that we would do as executive assessors, or that we train companies to do for any hire. Step one is get clear on what success is in the role. It's amazing to me how, I mean, I really do feel like hiring is one of the most broken business processes out there. And it really starts from the beginning where we say, we need a front-end engineer. Well, let's just take a generic job description, maybe pull something off of LinkedIn from a company we like and use that as our starting point and maybe tweak a couple words in it. I would say, really, if you want to make sure you avoid a hiring mistake, start from first principles. What results do we expect this person to deliver? What's the business need that's driving this hire to begin with? And really get crystal clear, not about what we want this person to be doing every day, but really what we want them to get done. What are going to be the tangible, visible, measurable results that we're going to see when we hire the right person in this role? So getting that degree of clarity just sets you off on the right foot. And it informs what you ask in interviews. It informs what kind of candidates you even look for to begin with. And you may find that just nothing more than having as much clarity as you can around what you need in the role increases your hiring hit rate from, call it 50-50 to, you know, 75% or greater. Just having that clarity.
I love that. Not what they do, but what they get done. Like that's just right. A really great like switch lens of like, nope, that's the function, you know, that's the to-do list, but that's not what we're focused on. And I think that that's true. Like you deal with executives and they are like high impact roles and they're obviously there's a risk, like they're risky, right?
Sure.
If you do this wrong, it's very risky, but the principles go on every level, right? Mm-hmm. The number of times that you hire because you've got a laundry list of things that they want to do, but you're not really thinking about what they accomplish or where the organization is in its life cycle, in its growth stage, right? Like there are, there are people that it's like you bringing in a tiger that you're keeping in a cage and it's not good fit for anyone. They've just run everything over, right? Or the other way, someone from a really large company that's really established and you're bringing them into a small, very nimble organization, that can be tough if you don't really kind of focus through that. So I think that does definitely work at every level.
It's very true. There are different types and leadership approaches that work at different size and scale, different business models. There's very few individuals who are able to flex from zero to one to north of 100 million in ARR. Yeah. Like it's a pretty rare, and a lot of execs aspire to do that. And I think a lot of great ones say, no, I know what my sweet spot is. I know what kind of environment I like to operate in. And they certainly flex on the margin, but it can be difficult to just throw yourself into a wholesale, completely different environment and expect to have the same kind of results. Just a different leadership style is needed.
So while every organization is different, their perfect match is different, I'm certain that you have like your favorite questions, like those questions that you're like, oh, these are my favorite ones. These are my winners. What are some of your questions that are your favorites?
We get asked this question probably more than anything. I wish I had the magic question. The funny thing is, if I did have the magic question, the world would have the magic question.
Right,
Things get out there. If somebody figured out what the perfect interview question is, whoever it might be, it would be disseminated and everyone would prepare their answers. I will say this, there are qualities of great interview questions.
Mm-hmm. That's a great way of thinking about it.
Simple, open-ended, and about facts in the past, not about what a candidate would do in the future. Simple, open-ended, and about facts from the past as opposed to projections of the future. So this is, you want to hear like the interview question I've asked more than any other.
Absolutely.
Throughout my career. What was your proudest accomplishment in that role? Very simple. Now you say, that's ridiculous. Somebody's just going to give you the surface, whatever. That's right. Back to follow-up questions. We're going to dig. So the first thing I'm going to do when I say, what's your proudest accomplishment? I'm going to listen to the example they share. If it's highly relevant for the role, if this is like, wow, that sounds a whole like what we need to get done in our role, I'm going to pay more attention. I'm going to dive deeper. I'm going to ask more of those questions about what they did, how they did it. Maybe ask about a pivotal moment in that journey. Ask about some of the stakeholders involved. Ask about what the eventual result was. Really dive into that story. If it's less relevant, I'll probably spend less time on it. But the starting point, what was your proudest accomplishment in that role? Now I'd say, what was your proudest technical accomplishment? What was your proudest interpersonal? What was your proudest team accomplishment? There's certainly different flavors, but you're essentially asking for big positive events from the candidate's past and the follow-ups. The magic questions are follow-up questions.
Yeah. Well, and again, you set it up in a positive and safe feeling environment, right?
Yes.
I got to pick a topic. I got to find one that I am like, when you say proud, like that's the thing that kind of gets you swelling, that you're like, oh, this was really great. And it will often give you a lot of meat then for the follow-up questions, right? If you get really specific, then, you know, they may be pulling, but it's a great first start.
You know, what's interesting. I would say one of the other on my most frequently asked initial questions, what was the biggest mistake you made in that role?
Mm-hmm.
So it isn't that we're just talking about the accomplishments. We really do want to get the balance. The important thing is that I, as the interviewer, am equally enthusiastic and curious about the positive stuff as well as the negative stuff. As long as I'm showing that interest, that curiosity, that passion to hear more, the candidate will have a great experience and they're naturally going to be inclined to share more.
And I think, again, not only is this great for interviewing, but as we think about when we're talking to our markets, right? When we're doing our Nahito visits, when we're out talking to customers and potentials, those are still some great start questions, right? We're doing open-ended questions. We're trying to figure out their biggest problems. But those, again, are really great places to start. And I also think one of the things you guys talk about and train about that is so important is not only here's a great question, here's what you want to know as a business and what you've got to make sure you get, but that the candidate experience, because your job is to find the right candidate. At the same time, you are trying to entice that candidate to want to come here. And we've all had, and maybe some of us have done, those sort of hiring processes that are not great. In the product space, often it's like very project heavy. I've seen some very bad practices of, hey, can you go now build us a full business case?
Can you please do free consulting work?
Yeah. For like, can you do like a 2 week project for us? And then we'll let you know. Right.
Yeah.
I don't know about that. But so I know that's a big focus of yours is sort of the experience of the candidate. Tell me a little bit more about how you set that up for success.
Oh, it's so critical. If you really want to fill your teams with exceptional talent, you are going to face competition for that talent. I don't care if it's an up market, a down market, a sideways market. Top performers are always in demand. So the thing not to do, the mistake that we see in product and other roles is, okay, talent's limited here. Let's just sell everyone like crazy. When we find someone, let's maybe interview them a little bit, learn a little bit about them just to make sure they check the boxes. And then let's blast them with sales messages. All of the reasons that I decided to join, I'm just going to project that this candidate's going to be motivated by that. Let's sell, sell, sell. Guess what? The best performers get that all the time. All of your competition is doing that. They are out there selling like crazy. It starts to sound desperate. High performers start to go, what's the catch?
Right.
If you're if you're the one who has the courage to really dig in and learn about this person, that's actually attractive. You're communicating selectivity. High performers want to work with other high performers. Don't be afraid to communicate your selectivity. Now, don't communicate selectivity as an interrogator, as a bully, right? There's a way to be rigorous, to ask these deep questions, but do it from a place of enthusiasm and excitement. I cannot wait to learn all about you, the great stuff and the fall on your face moments. I'm excited to hear about it all. High performers are going to be drawn to that. They will find it. They'll feel even subconsciously there's something about this role, this opportunity, and you as a prospective hiring manager that's unique in that I feel heard, I feel listened to. You certainly got to know the real me. And if you think I'm a fit for this role based on all the digging that you did, and I'm about to join a team of people that you also vetted this thoroughly, this sounds like a high-performing team.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited.
That's a really great point. And yes, that I would feel the confidence that you understood me, you know the roles, that other people went through this. And I also think you bring up the word curiosity a lot. And I think it is a great mindset for the interview. And just, you know, genuine curiosity is you should be curious about the people you're hiring. And it also reads as very authentic.
Yes. Yeah. If I could give the world a pill, it would be more curiosity for many reasons.
Yes. So just kind of flipping hats then, if you were talking to someone who's getting ready to interview, right? That's like, I think these people really know what they're doing. How should I be prepared? What would you tell them?
This is such an interesting question. So here's the weird part about being asked that question in my seat. I know how bad interviewing is. I know how most organizations do interviewing. So when I have someone who's on the candidate side say, what should I do to prep for interviews? I prep them for the kind of bad interviews they're probably going to get.
Right. Don't get your hopes up.
If I was prepping someone to go through an interview process with one of my clients, I would say, get ready. It's going to be fun. Be yourself. Share openly. You're going to have a great time and don't worry about it, right? Just be yourself. And if it's a match, it's a match. If not, if I was advising someone who just wanted to get an offer with a company that's going to be doing interviews the way most companies do, you know what? Go through your last 5 to 10 years of your career, catalog your top 10 experiences, and think about what each experience is going to work for in terms of questions. So you may have this story about a really tight deadline when you had to get an enhancement out to beat competitors on this new release that was going to be you're going to be the first to leapfrog competition by incorporating AI into the product. That story could work for questions about innovation, stories about teamwork, stories about, you know, grit and determination, handling, you know, performing under pressure. There's any number of typical interview questions that you could apply this story to. So just be like, catalog that story. Mm-hmm. And when the question comes, tell me about a time you had to deliver a really big innovation under a tight deadline, you're ready to go. And don't worry about follow-ups because they probably won't ask many.
Fear not. You know, it's interesting. I've talked to a few people who when they prep, right, a couple of them like wrote out some of their stories from their career just to freshen them. Someone else did a sort of like a mental map of some of their stories, which I found really interesting because it would help you see those connection points and allowed you to tailor the story to the question versus deliver the story that you have prepared.
Yep.
And I thought, oh, that's a really smart way of like mapping out what you want to talk about. And just because we all, and if you don't know, you need to listen right now, but like, you know, you need to talk about results and numbers and just like refreshing yourself on those. No big deal, but just like make sure they're there.
Right? And that actually makes me think of another, like this would be a point of prep that I would say for anyone who's, you know, on the job hunt and is wanting to find a new big step up role, go talk to your super fans. Talk to the 5 to 10 people that love you the most. These may be former bosses, former peers. You can go way back even, but the people who really see what your awesomeness is all about and ask them. Talk about some of your old experiences and ask them what they recall. The people who really like you the most are going to be more than happy to share some of those insights. Not only does that help you see yourself through another person's eyes, help you see yourself through a future employer's eyes, it might remind you of stories you forgot. That does happen. Yeah. It also, frankly, we love when people find roles through their, finding roles through your networks is a great thing. So just having those connections may open some doors. Like, hey, I didn't even know you were looking. Wow. Do you mind if I make a couple calls and see if anybody, let me see if in my own org, if we might need, like, it can be a great way to sort of network without being too transactional about it, right?
Yeah. No, it's a great idea. I think the other thing that people who interview go through, they can come off several different ways, right? But some people, when we're really skilled in an area, it feels easy to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? And so we don't always talk about it as well, because it's like, well, you know, I love marketing. I could talk about marketing all day long, but I also have a fairly large assumption level because I just like, oh, but this is how it works. Everybody knows that. I don't have to talk about that. And of course it did that. Like that's, you know, it is a problem that also sometimes when you're talking to others can help you go, right, that's right. That isn't everybody does that way. Right. Like, you know, there's a lot of things that you want to highlight that they can help you remember.
When we hear the word blind spot spoken about a person, we often think about the negative blind spots, right? The things that are problems, issues, concerns that we're not aware of. Of course, that's everyone's nightmare, right? There's also positive blind spots.
Absolutely.
There are things we do, the way that we lead, the way that we think, that has a huge impact and we're not even aware of it. We take it for granted. It's just something that's so ingrained. You know, we at Toggle, we talk a lot about mental access points in interviewing. Of you don't want to just ask a person about where they've been or what they've done. You really want to talk about the people that you've worked with along the way. And those doors, just thinking about yourself through the eyes of others, can shine a light on things that you didn't even know were great about you.
Yeah. Yeah. I also want to go back. One of the things you talked about early, which I think a lot of junior managers or leaders have this problem, right? Is when you interview someone and you click, right?
Yeah.
And it's very easy then to end up with a team of people a lot like you.
Yes.
Right? Probably personality wise, could be experience wise, right? But it feels very easy. It feels very comfortable.
Yes.
But that's also super limiting. It's a bias that you put out.
Absolutely. Right?
And I know this is something else that you guys dig into to kind of make sure that you're bringing in a team that has those diverse point of views. You already have your point of view. You don't need someone else who has it, right?
Yes.
So talk a little bit about where you see the bias and how you help them attack it.
Yeah. There's a huge question. The only thing you can do with bias is mitigate it. We are human beings. Mm-hmm. We're hardwired to connect with people, to have these instincts, to have these attractors. We need to be vigilantly aware that that's our nature. And to do everything we can throughout the hiring process to minimize that. It's just critical. I would say the most important steps in that process, if you remember back to defining the role, focus objectively on what needs to get done. Not like, we want somebody who is this ambiguous thing called culture fit, where we don't even define what our culture is, but we just say culture fit, which is code for people like us. Right? There's nothing wrong with defining your culture. If you say, for example, like we share feedback very directly with one another. We have a culture in which people are very hungry for feedback and we tend to be really honest with each other. Hey, that's something important. And a person who is wants the kind of more kind and gentle touch may not be very comfortable in that environment. So I think that's okay. But just define objectively what you need done in the role. When you're interviewing, take notes. Gather the facts of what the person said. When they tell you a story about a product launch or about an innovation or about a team that they built or about a partnership that they had with the go-to-market team that was really effective, take notes on it. Base your decision on those notes. If you're going into the candidate decision saying, I can just really see him work here. I felt like they would really thrive here. I just was so impressed with the way they composed themselves. You know, all their answers were just this, that, or the other. No, what were the facts of their story that they shared? So when you're going back to that role definition, you can look and say, okay, we said we need somebody who is able to get these objective things done. Do we see data points that suggest that they can actually do that? Or are we just going off the fact that we like them?
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's really great. It's sort of a tangential question, but do you recommend, so one of the things that often comes up is reference checks, right? And would you put a reference on that would give you a bad reference? Well, I can tell you that some people do. but do you guys recommend references? How do you make those references valuable if you do use them?
References are incredibly important. There's so many reasons to do them. You need to verify the candidate's story. There are candidates who make things up. It does happen, right?
It does, yes.
Mm-hmm. Also, candidates do have blind spots, negative ones and positive ones. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the third party is going to tell you something you never could have gotten from the person directly. Frankly, references can be an incredible way to onboard people. You're going to hear from a person's former bosses, former colleagues, about what it was like to work with them. And when you share with a candidate, you know, hey, we think there's a great fit here. You've never managed a team like, quite like this before. You're going to have product marketing, which you haven't had in the past. And we shared, you shared some things with us, blah, blah, blah. And so we're going to work with you on that. If you're sharing what they told you in an interview, you're like, yeah, I told you that. But if you say, you know, we spoke with references and it sounds like there's an opportunity to improve in terms of team management. I wouldn't reveal the who said what of the references.
Right,
But if you've talked to five people and you've heard a consistent theme around team management, that is compelling feedback. Now your new hire sees all the areas of greatness and they do know that there's one thing around team management where you're going to be supporting them, right? Not as a watch it, like we think you're going to fail, you wouldn't be hiring them, but like there's room to improve in how you manage teams. And that's something that we heard from references. Definitely do them. Have a position on who you want to talk to. What I wouldn't do is just say, hey, candidate, can you give me three people I can talk to?
The neighbor and the dog sitter come in.
Sure. Yeah, no, great. We just would say a well-conducted interview process. You'll know who it is. You'll actually know the names of the people you want to speak
stories.
To. That's right.
Let me talk to this one.
Say, I would love to speak to these four or five people. Would you mind making intros? Let them make the intros and then have some rich data-driven conversations with those individuals.
And the same idea, I would think, some open questions.
Open-ended questions. Yep. And a balance of the good and the bad. There's a whole, we have a whole playbook on references that that we go into in our training, which is, it's a lot of fun and very, very powerful.
I imagine when you, I love that you guys both do interviews, right? You do that, but you also really train organizations, right?
That's because
Right. And that's the thing. Like if you're watching this on the video, you can see like his eyes sparkle when he talks about the training, because then you're not just making a good hire. You're changing the way that organization thinks about and acquires talent forevermore. Right. That impact is really big. And I'd love any stories you have about some of the organizations and the process. I know you can't give specifics, but stories about how they've changed or kind of feedback they've given on how this has affected them.
Yeah, that's right. I just coming back to kind of our why, our purpose, we built this business over many years with you know, a very clear North Star in mind that everyone benefits when high performing, happy, productive, capable individuals are in important leadership positions or any position within an organization. Mm-hmm. If we can just play a role in helping companies get the right talent in and help talent, help individuals find happy homes through that same sort of, you know, set of heuristics, set of practices, set of tools in a hiring process, everyone's happier and more productive. It's a mission we that gets us up every day.
Yeah. I mean, I would think even if you were doing this process continually, the confidence you have when a new hire starts goes up. And that matters, right? I mean, there's all kinds of things, but it matters everyone's mindset because it's not just the individual hired them. But if you're talking about a leadership position, it's mm-hmm. the entire exec team.
Yes.
And if they're like, well, we know what we have a good system here. Look at the great things they've hired. We're bringing in another. You get the benefit of the doubt. And that can be really powerful.
Absolutely. If you think about the amount of churn. So I've seen 7 studies that look at hiring success rates in terms of mm-hmm. how often, what percent of the time do we get what we expected with a hire? Does somebody work out the way we expected to? Those 7 studies, I think the lowest is 40%, the highest is 60%. So it hovers around 50%. Mm-hmm. Think about how many years it takes to get the right leadership team in mm-hmm. if you have a hiring hit rate of 50%. Oof. It will take, you're going to have a whole hiring process, an onboarding process. You're going to figure out there's a problem. You're going to need to remove half the people, start a new hiring process. You're going to get half of those right. So we're talking
right?
It can be
yeah.
years to get the right team in place. And that can erode your confidence as a leader, your ability to surround yourself with great talent. And it sets you back in your business plan enormously. Think about mm-hmm. all that time spent doing the jobs of people that you hired these people to do. You're doing their jobs for them for perhaps years while you're trying to get these hires right. There is nothing as confidence building, empowering, and forward moving as building a well-calibrated, accurate hiring machine.
Yeah. And that speed is also, I think, one of the reasons that PE and VC firms are so, you know, that they're not talking long timeframes, right? Yeah. They're on a much shorter thing. So the problem is more acute. But it's true for every company, right?
Like, yes.
You know, whether or not you have more patience for it, it is waste time. And during that time, you know, you've got competitive disruptions. You've got other layers of the organization who are very frustrated by bad hires. And it is a very painful problem that we should all look at addressing.
Yeah, I think it might be the biggest problem. If you talk to senior execs for a living, if you spend all your time talking to, you know, CEOs and other senior executives about their successes and failures across their careers, you will see the most pain around the talent, the bad hiring decisions.
Yeah.
So yes. much cost for the organization, for themselves, and clearly for that team member that they shouldn't have hired.
Yeah.
Everyone loses.
Yep. All right, Jordan, we talked about lots of different things today. Mm-hmm. If you were going to have listeners do 2 things differently tomorrow based on what we talked about today, what would it be?
2 things to, well, take our training would be one, because that one buys you like a whole bunch of things you can do differently. There really is a set of tools that we share. We have a program called Talgo On Demand where you can get a whole set of tools on your own time and have some live experiences with my co-founder, Matt, and myself to build your own skills. Nice. I would say, aside from that, if I had to just kind of distill it, just be clear on what you're looking for in a role, spell out what actually needs to get done. And then when you have candidates in front of you, there's a whole thing around sourcing candidates we didn't really touch on, but when you're in front of candidates for this role, come at them with total curiosity and enthusiasm. Don't judge them. Just listen and take notes. Ask them about where they've been and what they've done and take notes. Get clear on what you want and get curious.
Love it. Yes. And don't forget those simple, open-ended
yes.
questions about facts
about the
past.
That's right.
Yes. And I think, again, just for our listeners, when they think about talking to the market, like remembering to talk about facts will keep you from them thinking about, I wish it had worked this way, which is not, it's not going to help us at all.
Yes.
All right. So if people want to learn more about hiring from you, if they want to check out the courses, I didn't realize you had on-demand courses. That great, because that means like any individual can go and improve this skill, which makes a huge difference. Where should they go?
Just go to talgo.io. You'll see right at the top there is Talgo On Demand. Click on that. We have three packages, depending on how deep you want to go, how much live time you want with us. I will say the live coaching is an awesome, awesome thing. It's kind of like we can be your personal trainers to help you become a great interviewer. But yeah, talgo.io, talgo.io.
Excellent. Is that where we find your blog posts as well? I know you like to write
about blogs are there, or you can follow me on LinkedIn, Jordan Burton, Jordan W. Burton. So.
All right, Jordan, this was a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you for having me. Really enjoyed it.
Excellent. All right. Well, that does it for today's episode. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And don't forget to join us next week when we tackle another great topic designed to help you elevate your product, your company, and your career.